Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2945. Tonight we're having a special show, and I noticed on the website there, our website, Lisa Zarcone, one of our really, really good family members, I love Lisa, she's great, mentioned that, you know, June is the month that is dedicated to mental health for men. Okay, that's what it is. It's Mental Health Month for, you know, to remember men. So I thought I'd do a show on that because I used to work at Greystone Psychiatric, and I learned an awful lot. I was a state-certified technician. So I have my own notes, and I have notes from today even. All right, so anyway, we're going to have quite a show, and you'll learn an awful lot from this. Forgive my voice. I had some surgery done and so forth, and I think it sort of like makes me rough, but you can still hear me. First of all, let me do the mission statement here. Let me read it. Okay, we have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone, and it does. It also affects you mentally. It can. We're going to get into that. But number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse. Information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Okay. So I have with me my boss. Yes, he's my boss. He's the founder of NASCA. And I told him he should be on because this is about men. So I'm going to open up his mic. There he is. Hey, Bill.
There
how
I
you
am.
Doing? There you are,
I
by God.
I hardly ever do.
Well, I have a lot here to discuss, and it is it's very interesting that Lisa had brought that up, and I want to thank her for bringing that up. And I did put a little notation there that I would, you know, say something about mental, you know, problems tonight that people can have because of child abuse. Okay, the two do go together. I saw it. I worked with it. And a lot of us have it in our families, let's face it, okay? So I wanted to get started a little bit here. The number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And if I didn't say before, I'm Carol Levine. I'm vice president. And that's why Bill is my boss, okay? He's president, so there you go. But anyway, okay. June is the month that they actually celebrate. I hate that word, celebrate. They dedicate for men. See, so often men are so shy and bashful about coming forward with, you know, different problems that they might be experiencing in their life because they're supposed to be the tough one. They're supposed to be the strong one. They're supposed to be macho. Well, so that whatever name you want to give it, they don't want to come forward. A lot of times they're embarrassed, okay? So that's why they don't even like many times to discuss child abuse in itself. More men are coming forward now in that capacity, you know, to speak about, to tell a story right on our show here. We have this platform Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And I'm very happy that they do come forward because they have emotions and feelings too, not just women, okay? So what I'm going to be, you know, talking to you about tonight many times does affect women too, almost the same way. But we do dedicate the month of June just for this. So, okay, I have a 617 bill. You want to take care of that 617-834, that's what I'm saying. Okay, what I want to put forth here are males are affected by depression per year, approximately 6 million. Just think of that number, 6 million. 6 million males, my God. 6 million men every year. I'm going to open up this mic. Oh, it's Nancy from Georgia. Hi, Nancy. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. My throat is very rough, but I can't help that. I had surgery, not on my throat, but what they gave me affected my throat. Yeah. Okay, so well, if all of a sudden I'm not, you guys can take over. Okay. So anyway, I'm talking about June. June is Mental Health Month, and it's dedicated to men. All right, because this is a month that we do dedicate mental health issues to men. And we like to speak about it because, quite frankly, men have been left out for so many years, whether it be child abuse of all the kinds, the sexual, physical, and mentally emotional neglect, or whether it be with the mental health issues. And a lot of times those issues come, okay, they come forth from child abuse. And I know this for a fact. So I just want to start out by just saying that one in five adults experience mental health problems each year. Now, that's one in five. Mental illness costs America $193.2 billion in the last earnings per year. Per year, $193.2 billion. Because people are out with mental illness.
I mean, it could be fun. Come on, it could be fun.
That's a lot of money. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm getting two awards. I'm just showing up. Well, he's doing some international events, different countries are tuning in. I'm like, I'm just like, okay, I don't even know what award I'm getting.
Is there a problem on the other end there? I don't know. Anyway, it's okay. So five mental health problems affecting men is depression. How many times do we speak about people being depressed, okay? And I have to, you know, many times we've all been through depression. If a person is blue, as I like to call it, they're sad for 2 weeks, go get help, okay? I mean, because we can all have bad days, days that were sad, days that were depressed, and all this other stuff. But if you have it for more than 2 weeks, then I know to tell you to go and get help. That means that there's a problem somewhere. But 2.3 million Americans are affected by bipolar disorder, and an equal amount of men and women develop the illness. Men 16, now they're using men at the age of 16 to 25 years old. Many times men are more to develop psychosis. What is psychosis? And that's 3.5 million people in the United States are diagnosed with schizophrenia. I worked with all that. Now, psychosis is when you start out and you know you're feeling weird and maybe your job performance goes down, you have trouble thinking clearly, you're very suspicious and might become paranoid. You think people are looking at you or judging you, and people couldn't care less. Believe me, a lot of them, okay? But this is what people feel. You have lack of self-care. All of a sudden you stop, you know, taking showers, and you let your, you know, all of your ADLs, as we used to call it, and graysome, in other words, your hygiene, you let that go. You're spending more time alone. You isolate. You have stronger emotions when something happens and maybe the situation, you know, should have. or you have no emotions at all. It goes from one to the other, okay? And let's see. 90% of people who are diagnosed with schizophrenia is by the age of 30, and they are men, okay? You can be schizophrenic. Don't get me wrong, because I know this. You can show signs of being schizophrenic at the age of 18, male or female. But the men, okay, by the age of 30, it's 90% of people who are diagnosed are men, and it's 30%, okay, or at the age of 30. Okay, you can also develop eating disorders. 10% of patients with eating disorders are less likely to seek help. Men don't want attention drawn to them that they are suffering in some way. They don't want people to know about their eating disorders. Women who have anorexia or bulimia, they don't want people to know about their eating disorder either, okay? Let me get that straight. But on the other hand, men are even more less likely, you know, to say, hey, I can't eat, I don't feel like eating, I don't have an interest in eating, or to binge eat, go the opposite way, all right? Suicide. The highest suicide rates in America are found in Caucasian men over the age of 85. What? Over the age of 85. They commit suicide. That's unbelievable, but that's what it says. A lot of people don't live to be 85. But the ones that do, evidently, there's an awful lot of suicide amongst the elder people. Maybe they take their medicines wrong. I don't know. I'm a little suspicious of that. Okay, male suicides have been on the rise since the year 2000. Suicide is the seventh leading cause of death among males. The seventh leading cause of death among males. And this accounts for 2.2% of all the male deaths in 2011. So you see, it's on the rise, and I know that today, with the way that the world is, this is what's happening. People all over the place are committing suicide. Kids, young kids. We're finding kids who are 11 years old, okay, 11 to 24 are committing suicide today, and there's a high rise in that. In 2010, four times as many men as women die by suicide. Okay, totaling 38,364 died by suicide. Over three quarters of these were men. You see what the men thing here? This is why I'm speaking about it tonight. And Lisa had brought this up. I didn't realize that the stats were that high with men. All right, sexual orientation. Gay and bisexual men are more likely to develop mental health disorders than heterosexual men. Gay men by age 25 are at high risk. At high risk. Now, the risk factors, and I'm going to get into how it works with the, and we'll discuss this. But with risk factors, you have social isolation, substance abuse, unemployment, military-related trauma. Those who have served in the military many times can have some disorders of some sort. Genetic predisposition. If you have, and I know this to be true, if you have someone in your family who is bipolar or schizophrenic, there's chances are the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, as they say. Okay. There's somebody else and someone close in the family who has it. Men don't have enough testosterone levels. I can't read my writing. Anyway, they suffer from depression, stress, mood swings, and this is with the older men. Okay, so let's get that out of the way. Now, how does it affect us in America with mental abuse and child abuse? Okay, this is important because this is what we deal with on the show, okay? Men are experiencing childhood maltreatment. Who had experienced is a high risk factor for depression and emotional health, anxiety, and other psychiatric disorders. They do consider that to be disorders, okay? Childhood maltreatment increases risk for developing psychiatric disorders, mood and anxiety disorders, PTSD, antisocial behavior, and borderline personality disorder and substance abuse. Borderline personality disorder, this is what I've seen and worked with, one day you might act like a person who's schizophrenic. The next day you might act that you are something else, bipolar, and you go all the way around the spectrum with that. In other words, you don't have one set diagnosis. You can act out in all different types of personalities. Now, one thing they found out with the homeless, adult survivors of abuse and neglect may also be connected to other abuses, outcome like to child abuse. When you go through child abuse, it affects us in a terrible way. And with men, again, it's been horrible because they didn't really want to speak about it. I have to say, in the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, men are starting to come out more and talk about it. They realize that they're a person too, and they should talk about it. But they do have mental health issues, and that they don't talk about many times. They can become aggressive. They can become volatile in their behavior. How many times do we have domestic violence problems? How many times have we spoken about it? And the reason why we have so much domestic violence problems many times, it's related to, usually the guy or the woman, it can be either one, has a proper imbalance, okay? Maybe they need meds, something like that, and they don't have what they need. A lot of times they'll turn to alcohol and drugs rather than going to a mental health specialist. They'll do that. And many times I've seen that. And so it's a very difficult thing. You know, you put someone in jail, which you have to do. I really think you should. Hello. If they're beating their wife, say, and they're beating their children, for the sake of the family, yes, you have to get them in jail, incarcerated, go before the judge, and the judge will make the determination, along with social workers, as to whether the person is, you know, just a maniac who should be behind bars, or if he actually goes into a place where I used to work, Greystone Psychiatric. Because many times they do have, you know, chemical imbalances. And they need to be addressed. So with the homeless, a lot of times we look at homeless people. Now, I've worked with the homeless on the streets in New York City. I was a part of an organization that did that. And I enjoyed doing that. And, boy, we bought clothing. We bought soup. We bought coffee. We bought hot chocolate. It was mostly in the wintertime. Sweaters, hoodies, you name it, pants. Bras for women, all different sizes, all kinds of toiletries, you name it. Anything a person could need, we brought. We had a truck. It was called Midnight Run. We had a truck, and we had also vans, and we also used SUVs because a lot of it was donated, but most of it came out of Walmart, and they were so happy to see that. Now, I was a midnight run. Everyone knows I stay up all night, so it doesn't matter for me. Sometimes I wouldn't get home till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, depending on how many people were out there that were homeless. So what we did was we tried to help them, all right, as best as we could. And, yes, there were vets there. And that was very, very sad. And I wanted to tell you that the vets were afraid to come over and get in line because, you see, they were disabled. So we would serve them last because they wanted for the other people to disappear. And then we would give them jackets if they needed it, all other kinds of clothing, whatever they needed, and then what we had left, okay? But it was very sad to think that these people who fought for our country were homeless and out on the street. Now, that touches my heart. So anyway, people are afraid many times of the homeless because they think they're going to be crazy, and a lot of people are. They do have mental illnesses. This is true. They're afraid that they might become volatile. Now, in the time that I worked with the homeless, out on the street, there was only one time I saw two guys get into it. And they were getting there pretty heavy, so there were 13 of us that went into the city, okay? And so we had to sort of like help subdue them, and we straightened them out. But you see, there are a lot of people, Nancy, Bill, who are, you know, mentally ill. And at home, a lot of times they don't know how to handle their so-called loved ones' mental illness. So then they do end up in places like Greystone. Okay, now here's where the symptoms of child abuse and traumas in adults. They have too much anger. They are anxiety-ridden. Their emotional outbursts are not proper. They're not. You can't see why they're so emotionally upset. They suffer terribly from depression, and they have panic attacks. Okay, panic attacks. Panic attacks, of course, is something that I suffered with for years. And I self-medicated, didn't I? I drank my booze and I popped my pills. That's what I did to get over the panic. And panic attacks, by the way, are considered, if you look it up in the DSM or if you even just look up online, it does consider panic attacks to be a sort of mental disturbance, is the way they put it. If it becomes disorder, that's when it takes over your life and you can't function. Also, abuse. Trauma can impact the ability to regulate their emotions, and it leads to sleep difficulties, lower immune system. How many times do we talk about our immune systems? We're always sick. A lot of times people have many times have, like John last night, he suffered from fibromyalgia. I haven't had a fibromyalgia attack in about 3 years, knock on wood. Okay. But that does go along with it, you bet. And let's see, sleep difficulties, lower immune system, and increased the number of physical illnesses throughout adulthood. This affects us throughout adulthood. So there's a lot to discuss here because, quite frankly, I don't know. A lot of people know people who are mentally ill, who have disturbances. Many people on medications. And I know today that with the world the way that it is, that whatever healing a lot of people have been able to acquire is starting to go backwards. They're starting to regress. I'm the night owl, so I get the calls at 2 o'clock in the morning. Some people just need to hear my voice. Other people contact me constantly, and we talk for maybe 20 minutes or so, and they feel better. And then there's those that I'm on the phone with for hours. And if I think they're suicidal, I will call 911 if I have any idea of their location. I look at my phone. I see what the area code is. And I started asking them questions. I think I used to live in Elizabeth. Well, actually, I did. I just used that. But I was on Sheridan Avenue, which is where I used to live another time. Always close to the city many times. I'm over in Oak Street. Oh, yeah, you're in Oak Street. Yeah, I think I remember where Oak Street is. You have to prod it from them. And then I say, hey, hold on a second. I've been on the phone so long, I have to go into the bathroom. And they laugh. I'm calling 911 on my cell phone. And I give them the address. So that's what I was trained to do. And it's easy enough to do. It's not hard to do. I'm sure they don't like me much afterwards. Maybe they do, maybe they don't, and I don't care. I did my job. You know what I'm saying? So what we have to worry so much about, you know, with depression, many, many, many people, I've read off the stats before, suffer from depression. But remember, if you see a change in behavior with your teenagers, say, when I worked in detention, I saw this one girl, she was very inward, and all of a sudden she became so outward. The change was night and day. And she drew me a great big picture of a horse, and she was quite an artist. So I took that picture and I said, my God, this is beautiful. She has talent. And then I noticed that her behavior didn't change. She was too bubbly. She was acting like, I don't know, like there was nothing wrong. Her brother was on the other side, by the way. She was on the girl's side of detention, and her brother was on the other side. They came from a dysfunctional family. Mother had died, and father, I believe he needed mental health. I'm being kind here. Anyway, she decided that she wanted to be with her mother. Okay. And she was at peace with herself, which she'd never been before, at peace with herself. And I became suspicious. I'd already worked at Greystone. So I came in early the next morning, and I knocked on the door. I didn't know if they were going to let me in or not. Insurance wasn't covering me yet. I didn't care. I was banging on the door, and I went running to her cell because these kids committed adult crimes. They didn't have rooms. They had cells. And there, sure enough, there she was. And she had her neck. She was strangling. She was purple. She was purple. We had good nurses there, and they got her breathing, and then they gave me the nice job of going on the van and taking her over to Marlboro, which was a psychiatric facility, not nearly as bad, though, as Greystone. She was there 2 weeks, and they sent her back, and then she aged out. So you see, my point in bringing this up is it hits teenagers, it hits women, depression. And it takes away many, many lives. And with the men, people don't think too much. So I was kind of taken back today when I looked up the new stats of how many men, you know, are at risk of committing suicide. And that was 6 million, for God's sake. That's crazy. I had no idea. No idea. So who wants to say something?
Well, I'd say that, first of all, we'd love people to call in if they want to get in part of this discussion. So let's give out the phone number, which is 646-595-2118. If you call in tonight, you can join this conversation, which is going to be all night long, a discussion. And you can bring up points that you'd like to bring up or hear discussed or topics perhaps. But we're going to use the overhead of mental problems that people have as a result of childhood trauma, and specifically men. I am a man who had definitely spiritual problems and mental problems as a result of my trauma in my youth. I don't think it's that unusual for, you know, we have a lot of, let's say, consequences of child abuse. And, for example, the number of people who are incarcerated who have child abuse in their past is amazing. It's amazing. The statistics are through the roofs. 80-something percent of the people in prison had child abuse in their past, maybe higher. You know, and then when we talk about the general populace, we talk about how maybe 25% of the populace has issues of child abuse. And then, so it makes sense that, you know, in adulthood, the same number or a similar number of 25 or 30% have symptoms of child abuse, which is the trauma. So that's why these numbers are not surprising to me, because one thing follows the other, in other words, Carol. If you have trauma in your youth, you're going to experience many, many problems that will be similar to others who have experienced the trauma in their youth. It might not be the same set of them, as you said, but the same set, the same kinds of consequences occur over and over and over and by the thousands and by the millions. So this is what I want to emphasize tonight. And I hope people will call in and get involved with this discussion, because I know it's hard to believe, but this is just the facts. Carol has prepared statistics for us and some other objects of interest to us that particularly deal with men and their problem. But I don't think it's that much different than women and their problem either, to be honest. I think we're just the people who are emotionally upset when they are children, men and women, girls and boys, grow up to respond to that in their adulthood. So, again, 646-595-2118 is the phone number, 646-595-2118. And when you come on, we'll just bring you on the show and fold you into the conversation. You can have your opportunities to ask several questions if you want of Carol Levine and Nancy and myself. Mm-hmm. All right? Mm-hmm. And you'll just be another portion of the discussion group. Thank you, Carol, for leading this group tonight.
Well, that's just no problem. It's so sad when you go into a psychiatric hospital. Okay, this is Mental Health Month, so I'm going to talk about it. And you see all of the people, the patients. I was actually supposed to be on Ward 30, and I was assigned to Ward 30. And there was all men on Ward 30. And boy, a couple times, they'd get into fights. I had to call the police because of, of all the terrible fighting that was, I was afraid someone was going to get killed. And the funny part of my ward, they loved me. They wouldn't touch me. They wouldn't harm a hair in my head, I swear to God. Because I spoke to them like they were people, for one thing. Okay. And I found out that it's a good thing to talk to a person who understands what you're saying. Okay, when you're schizophrenic, by the way, as the years go by, many of them had become almost infantile. Those people you can't really do too much with because the disease of being schizophrenic, you go all the way back, you regress. Unfortunately, your mind regresses, everything. It's almost like you're a two-year-old, okay, and that's very sad. So we had a certain area for that type of people. Well, we'd send them down to medical services, and they would deal with them. But on the ward that I was on, there was mostly, yes, schizophrenic and bipolar, and we did have borderline personality disorder, too, and that is the worst of all of them because you don't know how to actually medicate that person. If a person is diagnosed as being bipolar, but, you know, insane bipolar, in other words, to the point where they can't function, but you know what kind of meds to give them. But when you are, you know, suffering from the other and you're displaying all different types of personalities and you're displaying all different types, many do suffer from DID, and you do suffer from all different kinds of ailments, okay, diseases. Like schizophrenic one day, bipolar the next, borderline personality disorder. And we were taught in class to look at it like an octopus. An octopus, because it has so many tentacles, whatever you call them. And each one was a different type of disorder, okay? So that's when you go into a hospital like that, you don't know what to expect. You do have to watch your back because I might all of a sudden remind someone of someone they don't like, okay? I mean, I didn't have that problem. Some did, though. Some of the other people who worked there. Sometimes they would put me on Ward 52. Other times I worked with the sociopaths and the psychopaths in 10 hours. Now, the funny thing about the murderers, the ones up on the third floor, and that was the worst floor, their rooms were always clean. They did their ADLs. They took showers. You didn't have to remind them to take showers. They wanted to take showers. You didn't feel like, you had to be careful, but you didn't feel like they were going to attack you. They were almost, they acted normal, do you know what I'm saying? But they were so opposite. They were murderers. They were serial murderers. And at any given time, they could go off. On the second floor, we had the worst of the sociopaths, which is different than the psychopath. Sociopaths are many times environmental, okay? You might come from a gang, and the gang has, they're soldiers, and they tell their soldiers to go out and kill this person because they're a rival. Well, they're brought up that way. They go and they kill someone. And they have no remorse, none, because they're being told what to do. This is how they were brought up. A lot of times a sociopath is environmental. The ones on the first floor were the least offenders, and sometimes, once in a while, we'd take them out into a caged area, And those are the only ones that went out. On floor two, no. On floor three, no. Absolutely not. I think I told once before, Bill, I think I told you. On the third floor, there was one woman. And she was sitting and she was knitting, just to give you an example. She was sitting and she was knitting and she was making this baby blanket. And it was very pretty. And some of it was pink and some of it was blue. And I thought maybe she was making for someone who didn't know if they're going to have a girl or a boy or whatever. So once in a great while, they'd get someone to come over and see them from their house, from their home. So I thought maybe she was making a gift. So I said to her, oh, what a beautiful blanket you're making. She said, thank you. And I said, who are you making it for? Expecting it to be a relative or something, right? She said, for my baby. And I said, what do you mean for your baby? I didn't know you had a baby. And she said, well, I don't anymore. My baby's dead. And I said, oh, okay. Well, me with my mind, the way that I think, I said, how did your baby die? And she said, well, I boiled the baby to death, but I still make things for the baby. So I didn't want to be near her anymore. What she was using to knit with were made out of plastic, but still in all, they came to a very sharp point. And I thought to myself, I don't think I want to get up and move. So I let a few minutes go by, and I said, well, let me get over and do some work, which made her laugh. And so she didn't take it personally. So there's a perfect example of having no remorse and a person who is truly 100% a murderer and mentally ill. Now, when those people had to go to the hospital, we had a hospital on grounds, but it was a small hospital. It was only for broken bones, like the fight I was telling you about. If someone got a broken nose or something, we could take care of that. But if they had a real issue, they had to go into Morristown Memorial. And they were shackled on all three floors, first floor included, if they had to go to Morristown Memorial. Because Morristown Memorial did not want, the responsibility of having someone from Greystone. Greystone was considered that bad. So then we had to take shifts of sitting outside the door. And if it was from 10 Ellis, where the murderers were, the police were there also. We had a police force on our ground, a small police force from Parsippany. So mental illness is not something to be taken lightly. There's all different degrees. At one time, they had an area for kids. They closed that down. At that time, they were doing all kinds of shock treatment and all kinds of things, but that got closed down. And then one by one, the buildings got closed down because of asbestos. Well, I always have something wrong with my throat, and I think, geez, maybe I got too much asbestos. I'm going to get it checked out. I don't know. But this isn't asbestos-related today. But the point is this. When people are mentally ill, so often the family gives up on them. They don't know how to treat them. They don't know how to manage them. And, of course, if they aren't educated in it, they don't know what to do. And there's too much anger. That's why a lot of them run away rather than being put in a place like Greystone Psychiatric or the Vroom building, which is in Trenton. That's the worst one in New Jersey. And I would say the Greystone is probably number two. But that's why a lot of people who are out on the streets are mentally ill. All right. And so what causes the mental illness? Each case is different. But they do correlate between the mental illness and also to child abuse. They have come to that conclusion. Because what happens is when we are repetitively abused as a child, whether it be physical, mental, emotional, sexual, neglect, all of them, whatever, we're not going to be completely normal. We're going to have problems in life, especially if we have no one to fall back on or we don't get the help that we need as a child or even as a young adult. And we're going to display things like terrible anger. That's usually the first thing, is the terrible anger. Anger that goes beyond any anger that should be out there. Anger where you hurt people and you do it on purpose. So you see, there's all things about mental illness and child abuse. This is going to be the person who's going to be in the bar and go home and beat his or her spouse or the children. Okay? This is the one that's going to do that because he's not dealing with his issues or she's not dealing with her issues. So they instead self-medicate. And if you drink too much, you're going to become volatile, okay, especially if you have that type of personality or disorder. Many people become terribly paranoid. They turn into paranoid, just so paranoid you can't handle them. They think people are watching them all the time. I had a little bit of that. I had a touch of that. I didn't like that. I would isolate myself a little bit, but then I'm really too social for that, okay? And I wanted to be out amongst people. And many times I just go to the city because, quite frankly, there's so many people in the city, no one even looks at faces. You can walk in the city and no one's really looking at you. You know what I'm saying? Unless you're doing something crazy like stabbing someone or something. So I always felt very comfortable in the city because I was like a part of a crew where I'm not going to stand out. And many times I lived near the city or in the city or out here in the country now. Oh, my God, what a difference. And sometimes I'm not sure which I like better, to be honest with you. So what do you think about that, Bill?
Well, I think, again, these are shared experiences by a lot of people who are traumatized. And, of course, you're not traumatized when you're young. You're beat up when you're young, and you're yelled at when you're young, and sometimes you're sexually assaulted when you're young. But all those things result in trauma in your, you know, later teenage years and in your adulthood. That's what the trauma mm-hmm. experience where it comes out. And because you're an adult, you have imagined control over being able to take care of it. I got this. I know it was bad, but it wasn't that bad, and other people have had it bad, and so I'm just going to fight my way through it. And that's the worst thing you could do, keeping the secret mm-hmm. especially. And we
that's
start
right.
that in our youth. But when we, you know, don't get our story told in our youth, we don't voluntarily tell our story in our teenage years and in our 20s. We don't voluntarily do it. Might be forced into it or be in a corner and have to tell it, but the best opportunity for us to tell it is when it occurs to us that we would be better off to tell it to somebody who knows what they're doing, and then we start talking and revealing our experiences. Now, the best way to do it is, you know, with a therapist of some sort, and that indeed is what you get in essence in a mental facility. You get psychiatrists, mm-hmm. not psychologists, but you get some kind of direction. And generally speaking, when you are handled, when you can handle your mental problem enough, when it gets handled enough, and you graduate from a mental institution, you're probably going to go get therapy, afterwards. So the point mm-hmm. is that mm-hmm. all this time you'll hopefully be talking about your child abuse issues, how you were abused. The secret will be revealed. Then people will know it, and professionals will know what they're talking about, what you're dealing with, and they will mm-hmm. be able to hopefully draw you out a little more and a little more and a little more. But this is not something that comes naturally to us. In fact, the opposite is what comes naturally to us. Natural for us is to be embarrassed by what happened and never want to tell anybody.
That's the problem.
So that's the problem. And so the solution is to figure out a way where we can reach these people and offer them a safe space, let's say, and a safe sense that we are genuinely interested in them. And in fact, if we're survivors ourselves and we reveal this to them, it makes it all that much easier for them to know that this is somebody, or to think that this is somebody they can trust, because he or she is telling me her story, so I think I could tell myself mine. And a little bit at a time, you start letting it out. And, you know, at a certain point, Carol, people who are starting to let it out and don't experience any kind of major injury, then it comes out like a waterfall sometimes, you know, because it's been in there so long. So, yeah. So that's my thoughts on this area of the conversation.
Well,
646-595-2118. Come on, people, call in.
maybe they think they form this category. They don't want to talk about it.
I don't know,
by God. But you know, look, we all have problems. I don't care who you are. I have my own set of problems. And one by one, over the years, when I was 30, I think, about 30 or 31, I was in the Red Bank and the Catholic Church helped me. It did. That was one. I always tease, it's probably the only good Catholic Church around. But that's not true. I'm sure there's some, all right? But these people.
Of course there are.
Yes. So
it's unfortunate, but things like churches and schools and things like that, they get a really bad reputation. Then it's hard for them to get out from under. Now, I understand.
That's right.
Tremendous damage. So, you know, sorry, go ahead.
No, they don't handle it right. Look, I don't care if you're a priest or I don't care if you're the Pope. I don't care who you are, okay? If you sexually abuse someone, whether it be a child or even an adult, whatever the case might be, or a teenager, you should go to jail. You should be held accountable. Right. You don't start playing hopscotch, okay? You don't do that and put them in one parish and then another one. You don't do these things. This is wrong. And, of course, the Catholic Church was well known for that, for doing that. We're going to have our own people look into it. And then nothing happens. The person gets out of that church and they go somewhere else. And, you know, but it's not just the Catholic Church, though. I want to make that clear. They're finding out that all churches, pedophiles go where kids go. So that makes it not just Catholic or Protestant, Methodist, Orthodox, whatever they are, or even with the Jewish. They found out with the Jewish church, too. I found information on that. They have a tremendous amount of child abuse in there, too.
Uh-huh.
And then those people who come around door to door, what do you call them? They drop off information. Yeah, Jehovah Witnesses. They do the same thing that the Catholic Church does. If they don't think that there isn't child abuse in there, of course there is, because it's everywhere. So instead of addressing the issue, I found this out not too long ago, instead of addressing the issue, they do the same thing. They just move the person to another state, and they become a part of Jehovah's Witnesses there. So if society is not going to stand up and say enough, and, you know, of course, they do demand answers at times of the churches and other organizations, but we don't seem to get anywhere. And that's very, very frustrating. Very frustrating. Yes. And I can imagine with you, yourself, with the priests, you're very, very frustrated. And I still have my anger. I'd go punch the person in the face or something or whatever. And then I'd have a tape recorder, which can't really be used in court, but the judge can hear. And I'd have them, you know, say, yes, I did it. Yes, I did it. I'm so sorry I did it. Well, I don't care whether you're sorry or not. The point is you did it. You know what I'm saying? You know, and you belong in jail. Okay. And I don't care if you're 84, okay, like Sheriff Bullock. That's why I was standing outside, and I was one of the protesters. And they're all coming forward now. They're coming forward now. I heard this recently. I don't know how many children. I mean, the man is dead. He died. I was down there protesting. I wasn't totally as quiet as I should be. Surprise, surprise. And I had a NASCA sign and so forth. I'll see if I can find it. I'll send it to you. People were taking pictures of me. And they were slowing down, asking why I was jumping around like a maniac. And I told them why. And they said, go for it. Where other people were more subdued. And there were a few survivors there that day, and they kept giving me bottles of water. It was like 92 degrees out. Oh, I can't stand heat. But I didn't care. They kept giving me water, and I kept jumping. There you go. And Marcy Hamilton was inside. She was inside that courtroom. So, you see, then he was, because there was a lot of commotion going on outside, then they decided to have him tried in another county. And I don't know what county that was. But between that time, he died.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah. So he never...
You know, it's we that missed out. Okay, not him. He has to pay the price, whatever it is, you know, perhaps in the later life. But we're the ones that are sad for ourselves because we feel like we didn't punish him enough. But you know what? That's
right.
BS too. You know, I don't believe in that. We have the amount of time on this here earth than we do, and you know, and we get to decide what we're going to do with it. And frankly, I'd rather do something constructive with my time. So you know, we do the best we can. Sometimes we hit on it, and sometimes we don't. But that's okay. But anyway,
well, I think doing the best we can. Yeah, that's what we should do.
I remember the whole story and that Marcy was there and so forth. So, yeah.
So, all right, Nancy, is there something that you want to say? Is she there?
She's on the list, sure. Nancy? Her mic might be muted on her end. It's open on our end.
Yeah, it's open on our end. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, she was having a little trouble there earlier. I don't know. Maybe she has to straighten something out. But anyway, the point is that this is all very important for people to understand that those people who are mentally ill should not be treated, you know, they shouldn't be treated poorly. And that can encompass a lot of different people. All right, it could be in the family, or it can be the homeless on the streets. You know, it can be kids in school. And most kids, many times, they come from homes that are making them have issues. Many times, kids are misdiagnosed. You know, they say that, they had hyperactivity, you know. No. It's not that. Many times, they should go into the family, and if they can, look at the family structure. And then they can get a better idea, because those kids, so often, you know, they're misdiagnosed, and they're not getting the right medication or the right treatment. And then as time goes by the time they get to be teenagers, they're the ones that are going to be out doing B&Es and all this other stuff. Many times they become juvenile delinquents, and they get into trouble. So that's a very sad thing. When I worked at Juvie, of course, I could see all the records and so forth. I'm there. And many of them came from dysfunctional homes. On Saturdays, we would allow for their parents, if they wanted to come and visit the kids. And three Saturdays a month, we'd allow for this. And I'm sorry to say that there were not that many people who came. Okay. Maybe they were home stoned, so stoned they couldn't walk. Who the heck knows? It's very sad.
Well, I went to high school, we had that same opportunity, but I lived so far away from home that I hardly ever did go home. But we were allowed to go home three times a month, and and people like myself, our parents were offered the opportunity to give us permission to go home with another kid. So if your grades were good and you had that permission slips from your parents, at least you could, if you're offered it, you could go home with some other kid's mom and dad for the weekend. I have to tell you, I missed it a lot of times just because my grades aren't that good, but it was there as an opportunity. But I will tell you this, it was lonely. When you were the only one in school and everybody else was home, they were all gone for the weekend, man, that was lonely. I spent a lot of time alone, you know, that way. So
that's very unfortunate, Bill. That's very unfortunate.
Yeah, I know. I know, but it's just the
did
way it happened.
Did you go home
for me
on holidays? I mean, what about Christmas and Thanksgiving?
I went home. I went home at Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Easter. You know.
Okay.
But I lived far enough away that I couldn't easily travel there. It was at least an hour and something's plane flight, plus the travel to and from the airports. So it wasn't like something you could do all the time, you know. I did go home on occasion. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that lonely feeling. Now, I worked at Devereaux, too. I've worked quite a few places. I kept trying to get more money. I needed money. No one knew where my goofy husband was. I think I told this once to you before. But probation made a mistake, and they had his name wrong. And here, for God's sake, I found out it was 5 miles down the road. I was so mad because he wasn't helping me, giving me child support. So every time a job would come up, if it paid more, I would take it. I have 2 kids to take care of. So, but anyway, the point is this. I also worked at Devereaux Foundation, and I became supervisor of first shift. A night owl had to be there at 6:45 in the morning. Yes, I did. And I made it. But anyway, on the weekends, there too. I mean, they could have, family come and visit them. As long as on their point system, they were doing okay. If they misbehaved during the week and we had to, I hated doing this, but put, cuffs on them with the chair and all that sort of stuff, say they were really acting out, maybe they became very vicious and they were starting fights and all this sort of stuff. It was working with the emotionally disturbed girls. Boys, girls in this organization. But anyway, if they were okay during the week, then they could go, they could have company come and see them. And then we'd take 1 weekend a month, and we would actually take them down the shore. Now, there were 22 girls in this building. There are many buildings of girls, but all I can talk about is mine. It was called Culpeper. I haven't the faintest idea why. But anyway, we would take them, to the stores, to the malls. As long as they were okay and we had enough staff, we would do this. And most of the time they behaved themselves because they wanted to get out, for God's sake. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
And one time I had one girl who was shoplifting. So we caught her and made her put things back. And then when we got back to the foundation, she got reprimanded. She had some of her privileges taken away. Just like you do with your own kid, okay? Have privileges taken away. So, but anyway, being alone on the weekends when other kids go home, that would be rough. That would be very rough. What did they do with you?
I just had to stay at school alone. I had certain, things that I could do, like I had meals to go to, but there would be a tiny little handful of us. Of the 100 or so students that there were 90 students, basically. and there might be a half a dozen of us that were left. Or there could be more. But on the worst weekends, there'd be, eight or less, and we were the remaining group. So we were fed, and we were allowed to go, play soccer and things like that, use the gym. But we weren't entertained, there was a TV there. We could go, sleep in the rest up in the sort of lounge. But yeah, it was sometimes very, very sad and lonely. And that just happened over all 4 years, over and over again. So, yeah.
I know that feeling of loneliness because when I was in the pedophile house, I was supposed to see my mother. Once a week, but she only came to pay the people to take care of me. But at least I see her. I didn't know where she lived, Bill. I didn't have a phone number, nothing. But she would take me to the diner when she did show up because I was so skinny. You saw that picture. I was skinny. So anyway, they called me Spaghetti and Meatballs. Here she comes. I would eat. I couldn't eat even the normal size because my stomach was shrunken. And my hair was falling out. So, but still in all, I got to see my mother. See, this is my point. Because when you're a kid, your parents are important people to you, all right? And I didn't tell her about the sexual abuse. I told my aunt that I trusted. My mother and I never bonded. So, but still in all, you wanted to see your mother. I knew I wasn't going to see my father. He was out in California. Maybe he was my father. He wasn't, though. And so I just had one parent. And so when she would miss, which wasn't very often, because then the people that I was with would call her up and scream at her, and then they'd deny me a little bit, even less, of food. So I felt really, really angry, to say the least. I think that's where my anger really started. So anyway, yeah, to be left alone behind for such a long time, you know, that's, you hadn't seen them maybe for months, and then to be left alone, that's very hard. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. It's lonely. It really is.
Yeah,
this is another thing.
Sorry for
you. We don't consider our kids going through this, because I'm sure my parents' perspective was completely different than mine. They were really happy that I was getting an excellent education and that I wanted to be there, and I did. But they didn't understand that there were still, you know, there were still things that were going on in my past, or in my present now, that were really bothering me and going around in my head all the time. And they knew something was bothering me, just couldn't figure it out. You know, so that's just the way it works. You know, and it was for me. But it doesn't negate the fact that it is sad when kids are in situations like that and they don't have the power to, you know, get out of it, of course.
Yeah, yeah. That's just too much. It's shameful. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I don't know what happened to Nancy, but I guess she...
No.
So the idea of this show tonight was to, you know, to talk about mental illness, and also, too, for God's sake, I know it's hard when you have someone who's truly mentally ill in your family. I know what that's like.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of us do, okay? And we might have our own issues, too, okay? Because the person who's mentally ill, it could be a parent, or it could be a sibling, or it could be both. Again, the apple
right.
doesn't fall far from the tree, okay?
No.
So, no, not at all. So, you know, the point is that... family, when the family structure falls apart like that, the people fall apart. And it's very hard. But for God's sake, if you have someone in your family who has mental issues, you know, give them attention. Try to help them. You know, don't just throw them away, all right, or make them feel like they should be thrown away. That's why there's so many homeless kids right now, Bill. I meant to look that up again. I was shocked when I saw it. I should have written it down, but I didn't. So I'll look it up, and then I'll have it for another time. But maybe those kids got thrown out of their house because they couldn't handle them. Maybe they were in, you know, living in other homes. They were in homes, and they in foster care, and they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they were being abused there.
Mm-hmm.
So they
could
end up out on the street. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So then they end up out on the street. And you see, there's so many pimps out there today. It is just so gross. It was always a lot. But now it's twofold. Okay? And so there's more kids that are being taken. There are more kids that are being subjected to, you know, doing all kinds of things out on the street to satisfy the pimp. And I always say, though, and I will say this again, too, the Johns are just as equally as guilty as the pimps. If you didn't have the Johns, the guys who are out there seeking that type of attention from young girls or boys, then the pimps wouldn't be there because they wouldn't be making money, would they?
No.
So you see, that's a major problem. And by the way, I hate to say this, but the United States is very, very high up on the poll, okay, of, you know, having pimps and johns and all this other stuff. And other countries, they have high, you know, stats also. But the United States, and if you want to go for states, California consistently has the highest human trafficking in the United States. Most are sex trafficking. Then comes labor trafficking. Then comes illicit type of businesses like spas, you know, things like that. Florida comes the third, and then New York. The cases are rising. Well, it says because of the border. And that, of course, I can understand. I can believe that. The 10 worst countries, for all of this is China, North Korea, Iran, Russia, Syria, and Venezuela. And 19% of the Venezuelans are 19% are boys.
Wow.
So now with the human trafficking, we'll touch on that for a few minutes. But with the human trafficking, Nevada is 7.3 per 100K, so that's 1,000, Nevada.
Wow.
Mississippi is 5.00 per 100K, okay, 1,000. Then it comes to Florida, 4.04 per 100,000. Georgia, 3.81% of 100K. California, 3.80% of 100,000 people. And then Missouri, 377. So, you see, the United States has an awful lot of this going on. So that's why I always blame the Johns too, and they should throw them in jail. Look, they know where the I don't want to call them whores. They know where the women are, or the boys, or the girls. They know which territories where to go. And I think that in time, and I'm hoping that in time, that when things calm down, if they ever do, Bill. The police can become more involved, okay? It's very, very important that they become more involved with this. I do know that one time in New York City, down by Lexington Avenue, there was this van that went around. It was a white van. And they would pick up young teenagers on the street. And they had a facility, and they were being funded at that time. So they dragged these girls in, and they would feed them, they would educate them, they would give them clothing. Maybe they weren't, wonderful clothing, but they'd give them clean clothing, and they'd work with them. And they were funded to do so. But then all of a sudden, they lost that funding. And so now there's no help out there again. So you have kids. And don't think those kids don't have mental issues, because they do.
Yeah.
And then when they get older, and if the issues are not addressed, then they turn out into state hospitals and other places like what we've been discussing tonight. So, Lisa, if you're listening, and I put down there under her name since she brought it up, that's what gave me the idea to, talk about mental health tonight from Lisa Zarcone. I addressed it.
Well, she's a wonderful NASCA member, and she's very active in our community. She's up in Massachusetts in the Boston area. If you ever get a chance to see her, she appears a lot up there. Please go and say hi. Tell her you heard about her on the radio show and so forth. But we are sincere about how grateful we are for having a person like Lisa. And she's not the only one, but she's exceptional.
No.
She stands out. Because of that, to carry our message, she mentions it, NASCA all the time. She puts it in her press releases all the time and so forth. So it makes a difference when somebody who is really well appreciated. Because if you ever hear her, you can't walk away feeling that wasn't a good thing. I'm glad I took the time to go to that thing. That's how you feel. She's a wonderful gal. So thank you
very much,
Lisa Zarcone.
Yes. And, so I wanted to, bring this forth. And she might be listening. You never know. I don't know. But because I put it on Facebook. Okay, so maybe she saw it, maybe she didn't. But anyway, it is a subject matter that isn't, spoken about enough. I happen to have a lot of education in it, so I can talk about it. But there aren't many people who do, So I don't know, we don't really get into it too often. But it is definitely something that should be looked at, the mental health of we, the survivors, you know. So we always talk about the therapist. When you go and you look for a therapist, okay, you can therapist
right.
shop. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
And people should know that. Don't think that you're obligated. Remember, they work for you. You don't work for them. You give them the information, you tell, and hopefully you'll, you know, make bonding, some sort of bonding, but a professional bonding, and it's not always going to be comfortable, because sometimes if you have a really good therapist, they will find, you know, issues and want to talk about it, and sometimes you have to look at yourselves. You absolutely do. And
yeah.
Because we survivors are not perfect.
No.
But we certainly didn't deserve, you know, what we got. And the reasons
right.
why so many of us did turn to alcohol and drugs, the reason why so many of us turn to the streets and other things that we did. And like Bill had mentioned before, if you look in the prison system, I know about this, the stats are so high that they came from a dysfunctional background. Maybe there were drugs going on. Maybe they've seen all kinds of people being beaten up like I did, okay? I always tease because a lot of my kids, my friends, they did go to jail. They went to juvie. In those days, they didn't really have juvie as we know it today. But it was they'd put them in a different part of the prison, and they were sort of like isolated. But the point is this. You treat your kids poorly and make them feel unloved, make them feel unworthy. And if you abuse them in other ways, the ways that we speak about on this show, physically, mentally, emotionally, sexually, and neglected, if you do that, you're not going to have a child that's going to grow up strong, straight, and tall, okay? And they are going to have problems. Because as we get a little bit older, even in our teenage years, we start realizing, hey, I see how so-and-so is treated at home, because I saw this. I see how that person is treated at their home. I know how I'm treated at my home. And all of my friends were all dysfunctional. Most, 95% of them were dysfunctional. They came from homes very similar like what I came from. But I did have boundaries. There's certain things that I wouldn't do. I would not shoot heroin. And I had two friends die in front of me who got heroin, all right. They're so pure, they fell to the ground, and I had to leave them. The police were coming. And I didn't want to go back home. I left home because I was being abused there. So my friends out on the street treated me well. But the point is, look at the lives that a lot of us, I'm not, you know, different than a lot of people. A lot of us on this show, for God's sake, have gone through very similar circumstances. And, okay, mine's pretty severe, but there's other people who have severe, even worse. And then there are those that aren't quite so severe. But trauma is trauma. And that's why we have NASCA. And what I say to you is, we don't take a measuring stick. Oh, this one went through this and this and this and this and this. No, we don't do that. One act of abuse is too much. And that can be physical, mental, emotional, sexual, or neglect. And those of you out there who are listening, who are not a part of NASCA, and I, by the way, I handed out a lot of cards the other day when I was getting in the hospital here, the surgical center. I handed out a lot of cards, and I showed them, you know, the NASCA website and all this stuff. So if any of you are listening, you know now about NASCA. You've already looked at the website, I'm sure. I spoke to a lot of people. And maybe you heard tonight. Maybe you listened tonight. I encourage you to listen, you know, when you can, and you learn more about child abuse and what it does do to children. And then what type of adults many times they turn into. And don't only judge a child. Don't always, you know, judge a child as being bad. Because maybe there's a reason why that child turned out rough, tough, and did some things maybe they shouldn't have done. There's always a reason. And those kids that are out on the street, don't judge them so poorly either. I saw this one guy that was under a blanket. I mentioned this about a month ago. And he was totally covered. I didn't know if he had died or what. This is in New York City. I went over to him. I kicked him. I kicked him in the knee. And he quickly pulled the blanket down. And he had red hair, boy. Whew. But anyway, I said, aren't you hungry? And he said, yeah, I'm hungry. I said, well, why aren't you over here getting your stuff? He said, you really want me to? Do you really want me to? And I said, yes, I do. And I stuck my hand down and out for him. And he took my hand and he looked at me like I was an angel or something. Holy Christopher. People don't usually give me looks like that. So anyway, he got up and we went over. And he was being fed, and we made sandwiches, all kinds of stuff, Bill. Turkey and cheese sandwiches, yes, peanut butter and jelly, but also I think the other one was bologna and cheese. So they had soup, they had bologna and cheese sandwiches, they had all kinds of little baggies of potato chips and whatever, and a drink. We would put it in a bag and give it to them. And that was a full meal for them because they had soup, too. And coffee or hot chocolate, plus all the clothing. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. So you see, this is a way that we can give back, all right? As society needs to learn to be kinder to each other. Sometimes people don't understand me, Bill, because I give so much, you know, of my clothing or whatever. And I can be taken advantage of. I can be. And I have to be careful. So I make sure that I give, you know, to people that are, you know, like if I give someone $10 on the street to go get something to eat in the city or even over here, it doesn't matter where it is. I go with them to the store because I don't want them buying a bottle of booze with what I give them, okay? I want them to eat. And even if we just go to Mickey D's, if there's one close by, whatever, at least they're eating, okay? And then I've done my job. So right. So if we had a society of people that were kinder, you know, and more caring, because unfortunately people, for the most part, are very, very self-centered. They're very self-centered. And they're only thinking about their own gain. And what makes me happy? Gimme, gimme, gimme. We need to learn to give back. That's what we need to do. And those of us who are survivors of severe or even not severe, just plain child abuse, it's up to us, I think, to teach other people, you know, how to give. I think it's a part of our mission. And to sit down and talk to them, to learn about prevention, intervention, and recovery. That's our mission statement. It's in that. And if you learn to go to our website, you know, NASCA, NAASCA.org. You'll find the red blocks there. Open up each one because each one is a separate topic. Open it up. Learn about prevention. Learn about intervention. Learn about recovery. And maybe you can help save someone's life. If you see someone who's in trouble, who's being beaten, for God's sake, don't keep your mouth shut. You see children being beaten, make a phone call. And we always use child help, okay? That's 1-800-4-A-CHILD for children. You can be in the state of New York and call their headquarters, which is mid-state in the country somewhere, and they'll help you over the phone because I called them at 2 a.m. one time, and I didn't tell them who I was. I wanted to see what they're going to say to me. And they said all the right things. They're trained. They're counselors. I'm a counselor. They knew what to say. They knew how to help people. And then I told them, well, I'm a part of NASCA. What's NASCA? National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And we work for adults. We work for children, too, for children's rights. And we've had them on the show 3 or 4 times. Now I'm going to call them during the week, Bill, and see if I can't make a date with for them to come on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So we don't have much time left. I want to thank all of you out there who have listened. And Bill, maybe you'd like to say a few things before the show is off.
Good
no,
night,
I just
everyone.
Wanted to know. Oh, there she is. Wow.
Have
nice.
You been listening?
Yeah, I had you guys on speaker.
Oh, because we asked you to reply to something on occasion and we couldn't find you.
Ooh, sorry, I missed it. Sorry, guys.
That's
but
right.
I love you
glad
guys. It was a wonderful show, and thank you guys for talking about mental health and men's mental health and everything else in between. It was a wonderful show. It was so important.
You're welcome.
Well, thank
all right.
you, honey.
Well, thank you very much for being here with us, all right? You're next welcome. Week, we're going to have another set of five shows, and there's one fascinating guest that we're going to have, Carol, is next Friday, a week from tonight, is from
uh-huh.
Ho Chi Minh City in Saigon. I mean, the one that was called, used to be Saigon, the Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam. I think it'd be really fascinating. But, you know,
well,
her story
I'd be happy
is just
to do
like,
that one.
It's just like our stories. It's just like our stories. And she's obviously very well written. She speaks perfect English. So,
uh-huh.
But I think it'd be
uh-huh.
just very interesting for us to have a guest like that, you know, to let us know, really. I just want to juxtapose, you know, our own stories, which we're very familiar with in the United States, with this story of the gal from Ho Chi Minh City who, you know, spent some of her time in the U.S. and some of her time in Vietnam. I think it's going to be fascinating. So,
oh, I think it is. Yeah, I'm going to love it.
Yeah.
I'll be love hosting
yeah.
that one. But anyway,
yeah.
that's wonderful. You see, we are worldwide. This is what I was telling the people
yeah.
over there at the surgical center.
Yes.
This is NASCA is not just our country, it's worldwide. So
right.
English speaking, though, I mean, we don't do anything other than English speaking, not that I know of. So we do have people calling from down under. We do have people calling from Great Britain. And we have people call in from, well, from Vietnam, okay? We had,
yep.
He was calling in for a while. Now I can't remember his name. He was on our show. I can't think of him. But now we have people calling in from all over the place. We just simply do. So I will be honored to have her on the show. And I think that's great.
Good. Well, so will I. I want to thank Carol for tonight's show and, you know, all our hosts for taking on this responsibility. And that's what it is. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
we need people to be here to lead these shows 5 nights a week. But we also need and desire folks who don't have to take a commitment. But we want them to feel free to call in any time. If something sounds
mm-hmm.
interesting to them, we want them to call in because that's how we engage the community. You know, we're not all going to be interested or available every night of the week, but the show is on every night of the week, and it's important that people show up and participate in it. So, you know, I hope that becomes the case more and more. I should say that we now have a little bit of trouble getting special guests. However, if you want to be a special guest, then all you have to do is contact Carol, myself, or John, any of the three of us, and we'll set you up with, we'll let you know what's available, and I'll schedule you between the three of us, because we have lots of slots, though. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday are the days that we put on special guest shows, like next Friday is the gal from Vietnam. And then on
mm-hmm.
Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have co-hosts that come on as hyphenates, as professionals and survivors, who lead whatever conversation people want to have. So we have kind of an open topic forum every one of those nights, too. So, and when we can't get a guest, frankly, for a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we turn them into open mic shows so that,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
there's plenty of opportunity. And we have found these are quite popular, open mic shows. When last week we had one that had nine guests on it, nine panelists,
yeah,
which is
yeah.
perfect.
There was one night while I was on, I had six. I know. You
That's
never.
Right.
This is for the panel. People should understand that because we have a lot of people listen to the computer. We do.
That's right.
And But
so,
you know what? I just want to say something, you know.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to call in, because if you can talk on the phone, you can talk on the show. It's as simple as that.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That's what makes it so nice. You're in your own home or wherever you are, and, you know, you're comfortable, and you can put your two cents in there. Yes, you can. Okay?
That's right.
So, so yeah, do call in.
All right. Well, thank you again, Carol. I'll be quiet, and you can finish the show off with the music and so forth.
All righty. Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. Good night. God bless, and have a safe weekend.
Blog Talk Radio.